Juan Perez, what's your thought on this analogy? Websites are to businesses as AI agents are to fill in the blank.
Absolutely. The way that work will be done in the future.
All that and more on this episode of Transformers. What does transformation mean? And what can we learn from those leading the way? Join me as I talk to my fellow nerds about our experiences in technology, business, and, you know, just being human, too. I'm Anne Fanai, CIO and Vice President of Business Platform Transformation at IBM, and this is Transformers, a Think podcast. Juan, thank you so much for joining me here today. Absolute pleasure. And I know I'm not supposed to play favorites, but you are definitely one of my favorites. So let me give you a second, let you introduce yourself. You got, you know, you're an amazing person in an amazing role.
Thank you, Anne. First of all, I really appreciate you inviting me, and I commend you for doing this, wanting to share your perspectives as a great CIO, as well as the perspectives of others, other leaders in different parts of the business, other leaders in technology, so that your audience can continue to really learn from our experiences for them to do better than we have over our own careers, right? So I certainly commend you for that. Thank you again for inviting me. It's my honor to be here with you. I'm the CIO for Salesforce. I've been with Salesforce for about 3 years now, and I have responsibility for all the internal technology in the company, the data and the analytics teams that we have here in the organization, as well as global business services. It's a group of about 5,800 professionals, both internal and external folks who support our company. And we have responsibility for also being customer zero here at Salesforce. So all the technology that you so kindly buy from Salesforce, we get the opportunity to try and test that technology here before it makes it to our customers, as well as supporting another variety of technology solutions to support our customers.
Absolutely. And I think vice versa. I think, you know, we use your technology, and obviously I know our teams are getting together and seeing what we can learn from each other for you guys to learn about IBM's technologies and us to learn about Salesforce. So I love that not only we have a great relationship, I love that our teams are getting to know each other. I think it's just wonderful for everybody.
And I should say, before I forget, because I should have said this at the start, before I joined Salesforce, I was the Chief Information and Engineering Officer for UPS for a number of years.
Yeah.
And UPS is certainly a huge IBM partner. And I will tell you that when I think about the partners that, you know, I can certainly count as true partners in my trajectory as a technologist, IBM, while I was working at UPS, was definitely one of the top. And the support that they gave us as we were managing very complex projects and technologies was just phenomenal. So I will always carry a special place in my heart for the team from IBM.
No, thank you for saying that. And I think, you know, we touched on, it's a previous podcast, my journey. I was with IBM, and then I caught my IBM sabbatical and came back. So it's a special company to me as well.
Absolutely.
So, and actually that sets me up kind of perfect for where I wanted to start is, like, I think what's really, really super fascinating about that journey is from UPS, really a lot of supply chain logistics going on, to a CIO at Salesforce. These are wildly, wildly different industries. And I wanted to kind of just start out, like, what do you really see stands out most? Because I think my hope is people watching this come from different industries, and there really are some differences, but there's also some similarities. So I'd love to hear your take on that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'd tell you the differences first. At UPS, the groups that I was responsible for were really at the center of the universe. The company was hugely, and it's hugely dependent on all things related to IT, all things related to physical engineering, and anything that happened in the organization was connected with those functions in some way. In the case of a technology company like Salesforce, the core most important part of the business is the technology that we sell to you. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the groups that build, support, create that technology are critical to the success of the organization. And then right after that are the teams that ultimately sell the technology to you and that can support that technology as part of our customer success programs. The CIO organization is and has not been in the past at the forefront of much of what happens in the company. But that is changing, and it's changing rapidly, which is really great to see how now in a technology company, the CIO role is growing in importance. as well as the CIO organization, because the company has come to realize that the CIO organization has to be customer zero, has to be the best at implementing Salesforce technology inside of Salesforce, and ultimately has to make sure that we deploy and build technology solutions that can help a company like Salesforce continue to grow and scale. So it's been great for me to see over the last 3 years how the CIO org has grown in importance and in impact across Salesforce. I will tell you one thing that has been really valuable for me, and that is, as a technologist, keeping solid priorities that I carried when I was at UPS and that I've carried here at Salesforce as well. Really simple, security and compliance at the top. Resiliency and reliability comes next. Technology modernization and supporting digital transformation comes right after. Having the best possible team in place is key. And then, of course, driving and supporting innovation in the company is next. So those five and guided me while I was at UPS. And honestly, they have guided me here at Salesforce as well.
And I can attest, you told me that the very first time we met at Dreamforce back in 2023. And I remember that was like one of the first things you told me, and I wrote it down. And it's just, I think it's really powerful. And kind of that testament of, you might change industries, but the priority doesn't change. The secure the enterprise priority, they get the best talent. Like, that's not something that changes even if your industry changes at all.
Yes. Well, you know, that's a really good point that you just made, because another thing that has been really helpful is to have common values that I learned a long, long time ago in my previous company. Values related to integrity, values related to excellence in what you do, and then carrying those over to the company that I'm in with today at Salesforce. And by the way, seeing the alignment that those values have with Salesforce's values, which start with trust and then go into customer success, of course, diversity, inclusion, continuing to support sustainability, and doing well for our constituents, whether it's customers, shareholders, and of course, the people that live in the communities that we serve.
Yeah. And it's funny, one of the things I was asked early on when I came back to IBM was, were there any lessons I learned in my sabbatical away from IBM at the other companies I worked for? And I'll be very transparent and say, I'm stealing one of Under Armour's values and trying to bring it into IBM, because I think it's so critical to transformation. And it's the thought of assume positive intent, because I think you can't let yourself get cynical when times are hard. You have to say, you know, we might disagree, but we're all trying to do the right thing. And that leads to more positive discussions, positive outcomes. And, you know, the positive friction you want to happen is, if I could say, hey, you know, I know what Juan came to me, we might not agree, but I know he's coming from the right spot. I know he's trying to do the right thing. And it helps you kind of get to the root of the challenges you're trying to solve as well.
I agree. And you got to do it in a way, just like you have presented yourself in many of the discussions that you and I have had, with such a level of professionalism, commitment, and motivation that makes us all want to do more for you. And that's why I'm here with you today.
Well, let's be clear. I do have my idiot moments, so don't put me...
Hey, we all have them.
So, but you know what, you touched on something, I think, a little bit about partnerships. You know, you talked about, in particular, IBM, but I think let's pivot to Salesforce and the way AI is going, what we see, like, you know, everyone's talking about AI, but there's so many layers underneath it that are going to make AI successful. And, you know, we've talked about partnerships, and I think, you know, with the agents that are coming out, I know we have, I think, is Ask Procurement, I guess, I believe is going to be one of the Agentforce agents.
Yes.
That was co-developed with you guys. And so just like pulling on that thread, starting with Agentforce, like, what's your thought on the importance of partnerships as we go forward and evolve?
Critical. So just like you, I'm sure, we've just been going through budgeting for the new fiscal year. And, you know, I just reviewed that in our technology council today. We showed up with, here's the budget that was allocated to my function. Here's how much we can actually do. These are the capacity numbers that we have across all the different teams. And by the way, this is everything that you guys are requesting. Right?
I just had that conversation with our hardware business unit this morning. Like, we can do, like, here's your list.
Yes.
I can do this and tell me what's going to move the needle for you from a revenue standpoint. What's going to save you the most money or drive the most revenue for that business unit? And I will make that happen for you at the top of the list.
Yes. But that's the thing, right? That the demands for IT are growing, and they will continue to grow. And what we where we find ourselves is that although I have just an incredibly talented and capable team in my BT organization, business technology, that team has capacity limits. And there's just so much that the team can actually handle and do at a certain time. So that's when increasing our capacity through the use of trusted partners like IBM becomes extremely important to me as an executive in this company and certainly as a CIO. And you mentioned Ask Procurement. That's a perfect example of how the procurement organization wanted to implement an agent in Agentforce that would support our professionals in procurement in answering questions related to purchase requests, different types of suppliers, getting the status of different requests in the cycle of a purchase request that's been made by the business. And today, if you want to get that information, you got to go into systems, you got to go and do queries, you got to take a lot of time to get that. With Ask Procurement, it's just as simple as asking a question. And you get all the necessary answers through this agent that can help you do your job more effectively as a procurement professional. Well, and we used IBM services to help us build that agent. We built it in record time. Now we're going live with it this week. We had been testing it for the last couple of weeks. And I'm really optimistic that this is just going to be the beginning of building more agent capabilities on Salesforce's Agentforce platform to be able to create more business value for our company. But again, the alignment with a trusted partner was absolutely critical for us. And as I think about the future of AI, the needs that exist in our business, I think it's going to be really, really important that as CIOs, we align closely with trusted partners that can help us bring these great technologies to life and at the end of the day, be able to generate great return on investment from those technologies.
I was going to bring up something from your podcast. So full disclosure, anyone listening or watching, Juan has also a wonderful podcast that I've encouraged folks to tune in on. But you know, we talked about kind of this partnerships a little bit too with, you know, you talked about procurement, but imagine like, you know, your ERP and your HRIS and your CRM system, like they might not all be the same company. I think that's where the importance of AI really comes in. And that's where you see kind of the art of the possible with those partnerships. And if you can put the AI or an agent on top that brings it together, that, you know, can properly answer and we train it well, like it's, that partnership is even stronger if you've got like Salesforce driving the most excellent CRM ever and, you know, other vendors filling in like where Salesforce doesn't have expertise or IBM doesn't have expertise. And, you know, that you have this wonderful product underneath, you get the data flowing in this gorgeous way, and then you get these wonderful answers that just, you know, help us everyone move faster with the AI generation we're in.
I absolutely agree. I mean, you think about it, right? For me, and I'm going to be a bit selfish here, I'm going to talk about Salesforce. Salesforce has best-in-class CRM platform. Salesforce now has brought Agentforce into the platform, and it's put us in a position now where through Agentforce, we can build agents. We can build agents consistently. We can build agents at speed. And most importantly, we can build agents with trusted data. And one of the things that we have done as we've built our AI solutions is ensure that we have this trust layer that assures you as a customer that what we're doing with our AI can be ultimately trusted, can be audited. It's not going to provide bad outputs that you cannot trust at the other end. Well, when you have partners like that, that can assure you that as you implement AI, as you implement agents in their platforms, you can trust them, it makes a huge, huge difference in the way that you enable these types of capabilities. And I also think that as CIOs, you know, we've gotten really good at asking about security, right? And we're much better at doing security assessments when you implement technology in your business. I think we're going to be doing a lot of AI assessments in the future to make sure that when AI is implemented in the business, it's trusted AI. I do believe that Salesforce has done that really well by now.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say this is something that's been one of IBM's principles, you know, since our first go around with IBM Watson. Some people might remember the Jeopardy challenge and the chess matches.
Yes.
But it's like, that's kind of where some of the founding principles around that, the trust, the transparency, you know, data ownership, I think we've really anchored in on.
But I agree.
Let me, pivoting a little bit here again, is I think, you know, you've seen trends come and go, not just in from multiple company standpoints here. Are there some trends that either surprised you that have come and gone, or maybe even didn't surprise you, but you were surprised other people were surprised. So,
well, you know, the first one that, of course, comes to mind is what's happened with Gen AI. 2 years ago, we were not even talking about Gen AI. And then all of a sudden, people get access to ChatGPT and they see the power of these large language models and how they actually can do things that we had not been able to do at scale before. That really was a surprise to many. It was a surprise to me to see how quickly that technology was adopted by many. It also was a surprise to me how we as CIOs jumped on that technology, partly because we were driven by the business's curiosity, right, around the implementation and the use of this technology, partly because our CEOs wanted us to go faster at implementing AI, but partly also because we saw the potential of this technology. And, you know, we went ahead and we implemented a lot of pilots, a lot of trials, a lot of tests. I think that all of that, which is no surprise to me, but something important to recognize, is that a lot of that now is becoming part of the normal IT approach to developing, implementing, managing, and supporting technology, including the justification of the investments in AI, which is great to see because at the end of the day, we've been doing this as technologists for a long, long time. And we want to make sure that when we implement these technologies, we can trust it. It can provide a real value to the business. It can be scaled and ultimately can be supported for the long run. So yeah, surprised how quickly it was adopted and accepted. Not surprised that now we're going back and implementing again some of the best practices we know about in terms of managing this technology.
No, absolutely wonderful and couldn't agree more. And do you see anything today that you might put in like a hype versus reality? So is there anything right now you see that maybe is overhyped and versus like it, we're going to kind of have that slam down to reality, back to earth moment with anything happening right now?
Yeah, it's interesting because depending on where you sit, right, and depending on your proximity to how the technology works, you can think that this technology can do a lot more than it can. Right? Think about a board member sitting in a boardroom for a company that it's in the food industry and asks the question, can Gen AI immediately help us reformulate a certain product so that we can be less dependent on a certain material that comes from a certain place around the world? That's a complicated question and it's a complicated problem. And the current technology that we have in hand is not necessarily ready to answer that question. So I think that's one of those things that we have to watch for. And I do believe that the CIO has the responsibility of being very effective in articulating what this technology can and cannot be used for. So that's a little bit on the hype side. But on the other side, I am already seeing it here at Salesforce as we've implemented and deployed agents to help us with customer service, customer support, and the potential that this technology has in providing customer support much better and effectively than anything we have seen before. I was talking with an ex UPS partner of mine a few days back, and we were talking about the potential of generative AI in logistics processes. And think about it, activities and tasks that were really difficult in the past to do well in areas like brokerage. By the way, IBM, when I was there, helped us with a brokerage project to help us more effectively classify goods that needed to cross borders. Classification of goods in brokerage is incredibly important. I wish we had this technology then, because this new technology helps you very quickly analyze this data, understand and see how patterns of data come together to be able to do better classification of goods in the brokerage process. So many of these areas are going to truly be transformed by the use of this technology. And I firmly believe that these technologies will provide great value to companies of all kinds.
You said a perfect word in there, which was patterns. And I think, you know, again, oftentimes, oh, it's a tech company, they're thinking about AI, but there's something about patterns. I mean, fundamentally, if you go back to natural language processing, neural networks, it's about identifying repeatable patterns. And that's kind of the basis of a lot of training that happens. And it seems like, you know, anyone that's got a logistics component or that patterns. I mean, this is an area where you'll probably see some great training, and I hope your former employer actually takes some nice advantage of that. As someone who regularly has packages delivered to me,
I think it's inevitable, and I'm sure the team is working on some really cool things over there. I'm excited about that technology now, and I do need to ask you a question, because with all this new technology, all these new capabilities that will come as a result of implementing Agentforce and agents on the Salesforce platform, and then the use of AI in multiple platforms across the board, you have to have some level of governance here. And I know that IBM has been putting some emphasis on the build-out of governance tools to support companies in the way they manage AI. I'm really curious. Probably you didn't think I was going to ask you a question, but I do want to ask you this one. How are you guys thinking about governance and the use of IBM's technology to support AI governance in general?
Well, and I think I hinted at this a little bit ago. So, you know, back to our first foray into this, I'll call it the Jeopardy days, one of the things we saw that was going to be super important was understanding, I guess, the provenance and the history of where the data comes from. So a couple key things is trust. I think we both agree on that one already. Transparency. And then one of the things I really tend to, I guess, harp on almost is making sure you know where your data is coming from, right? Do you know where that data started? And, you know, I think one of the things IBM really believes is, you know, we want the content owners, the data creators, it is their data, right? It is, we don't want to take ownership. It is bringing the insights out from the data as it comes into AI. So I think that's really another pillar besides the trust and transparency of IBM's view around AI is just knowing that, being able to kind of go back to the history of the data, knowing if it's IBM data, which system did it come in through, right? Had the sales record flow into a product purchase, flow into something that hits our ledger and plays out an incentive for a seller? Can we trace that data all the way through for something external? Like if you're using if you're using AI, we have a partnership with a company, Sirion Labs. They've built WatsonX into their contract lifecycle management. So when we're inside the Sirion Labs and for another company using it, can we make sure our customers can follow that same thread inside with our product working inside of another partner product as well?
I love it. I think you're in a great position to be able to provide guidance and direction to your clients on how we should be thinking about governing AI and the data, certainly, that is so much critical to effective use and application of these AI technologies.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting because I think even internally we have built in our core, like our intranet, or what we call W3, we have an Ask IBM. And it was actually interesting as we were training it up, the woman who was the leader of that team actually has the same name as an actress. And someone did an Ask IBM, insert her name. And it came up with this actress. And like realizing, again, this is where the data and understanding, like, do you have the right data that you're pulling in as part of your training? And can you follow it? It's like, you know, that kind of gives some interesting insight. It's like, well, no, like, this is an internal thing. And there's this person that if you just looked simply in our internal directory, that would have been a real quick answer. And, you know, but it helps you refine and train every step of the way. But, you know, just a somewhat humorous quirk on, you know, what can go wrong if you don't have the models pointing to the right data and you don't understand where the data that drives your answer is coming from.
I agree.
So one thing I'd like to pick your brain on. So I think you're the first guest I wanted to ask this question of is like, so you sit on some boards, specifically publicly traded company boards. I know a lot of folks are curious, how do you get into that? And once you get into that, I know there's different roles you can play on a board. A board member can lead like a risk committee or a legal committee. Like, what do you see as a CIO? What helped you kind of make that break into those first boards you were on? And then what role do you enjoy or find a CIO to be best at playing on a board?
Yeah, absolutely. Great questions. Well, first of all, I think it's important to express the desire to get on a board as a CIO. And if you don't express that desire, chances are that, you know, you will not get the attention of your boss, who should support you in joining a board, or the attention of others who may want you to be on their board. So that's the first thing. The second thing, I think it's important that we think of being on a board as a professional development opportunity. I actually saw it that way from the first time I joined a board 6 years ago. And for me, what a great opportunity to sit on a board and see how another company outside of my company operates, how it runs, the problems, issues it faces, and how, from where I sit as a CIO, technology can support helping that other organization continue to perform well. And through that exercise, you learn things that you can bring to your own company, right? That you can do better and more effectively in supporting your organization. I also think that CIOs are really well equipped to provide huge value to boards these days. You're starting to see more and more CIOs join publicly traded company boards because CIOs, one, bring a general business perspective. That's one thing that is really important to me. When I sit on a board, I don't want to be seen as, oh, well, that's the technology guy. No, before I'm a technology guy, I'm a business guy, right? And I think CIOs today have a great opportunity to be both great business people and simultaneously be great technology people. And then the other thing that I think CIOs bring to the table that it's really important for our businesses today is having a no-nonsense approach to understanding risk. And risk among many, many areas of the business, not just cybersecurity risk, but also its compliance-related risks. It's also risks related to M&A. It's risks related to the application of technologies like AI in the business. And that risk view that we bring to the table as CIOs, I think, is incredibly valuable to organizations. And that's why you see more and more companies bringing CIOs to the boardroom. And I'm hopeful that we're going to see more actually join boards in the future. I think it's a valuable position to have on the board. I joined the board that I'm in, and I have the opportunity to participate in the compensation committee, the governance committee, and the risk committee. And I bring a bit of a different perspective to all three. On the risk committee, I play an active role talking about risks related to technology modernization or the lack of. I play the role of talking about cybersecurity. I play the role of speaking about what happens when, you know, your technologies start getting dated and not in a position to support business growth. The issues related to third-party vendor risks and how you need to ensure that you tackle those. In the governance committee, my goodness, as CIOs, we do a lot of governance.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So you bring that perspective to the governance committee as well. So I think we have an opportunity to play multiple roles. If you're really interested in becoming a board member, first of all, you got to make sure that you have capacity. That's one of the biggest challenges for me. I wish I could do a lot more for my board, but I have a primary responsibility, which is a responsibility to my company. So ensuring that you have capacity to do both, support your company and do your job really, really well as ensuring that you support the core responsibilities as a board member is important. Secondly, that you're doing this not just because you want to have this on your resume, but because you truly want to provide help and support to the company that you're going to be joining their board. You want to make sure that you have passion also for what that company does. There's nothing worse than becoming a board member of a company whose products and services or mission are not aligned with you.
This is where you got to get a little mission driven if you're going to give that. I mean, a board is the above and beyond. I like the way you articulate your primary responsibility. Our primary responsibility is to the companies we derive our primary paychecks from, for lack of a better term. But it's like you can't overextend yourself and you got to really be excited about the company for sure.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, you cannot be a good board member if you're not good in your job. So you got to really always prioritize that. And then you also have to find when is the right time to do this. As young professionals, for me, it's a different story. I have, my kids are grown-ups. I have two grandkids. My family responsibilities are very different than someone like you. So you also have to identify when is the right time to do these things that fit in your overall life.
Exactly. And Juan, continuing down this path, like, what do you see specifically in terms of risk management that's coming up? Not just governance, but risk management.
Yeah, sure. I think Well, and one of the things that we have been working on diligently for now decades as IT professionals is managing risk. And that is why, you know, we put so much emphasis on making sure that before we deploy technology at scale, that we do appropriate change management in a way that's managing risk, right? We want our users to know how to use these systems, how to use this technology effectively so that we reduce the risk of failure. We also spend a lot of time in architecture work so that at the end of the day, when we build these solution, the solution can meet all the specifications required to get that solution to scale and run effectively in our business. Same thing with security, right? It's important that we do that. So ensuring that we maintain that risk management mindset as we deploy new technologies, I think it's really important in my view. And as it relates to AI, one of the things that you and I talked about some time ago is the potential risk of creating this challenge of this decentralized, unmanaged shadow AI. And what would the consequences be if we allow that to be pervasive across the business? So that's something that we have to watch for closely. For many years, we have been diligently working on managing, you know, this whole notion of shadow IT. I don't call it shadow IT anymore. I think that's an old view of how this should work. I think of it more as decentralized IT, where through appropriate IT controls, IT management, IT visibility, we can deal with this decentralized IT very effectively. I think when it comes to AI, we'll have to also think about this whole notion of decentralized AI, where we give our business partners the opportunity to build some type of AI solutions that are, of course, the right type solution for their business with the right controls, but of course, having visibility to what's going on across the enterprise as it relates to these AI technologies.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And with that kind of the risk angle too, I think I've often thought of it as, we know when something's new, some folks are going to be chasing that shiny object. And I think that's where the risk lies. Once you, I love that you say not shadow IT, but decentralized. Like the decentralization, if it goes a little bit too far, you know, chase that shiny object a little too far, that's kind of where things can fall off the cliff.
Absolutely.
I love your perspective.
It's the exposure of the data, the way that some people may use this technology can be negative towards the organization. So we have to think through all of this. And of course, it gives me an opportunity again to pitch Salesforce, the fact that, you know, you would be using Agentforce, building agents on the Salesforce platform gives you an opportunity to better manage this type of decentralized IT.
You know, to wrap up with you, you know, as you reflect on your experiences, are there moments that really stand out in your memory as like kind of those like, I was thinking that movie Inside Out now, the core memories. Like, are there core memories for you as you reflect on, you know, the amazing experiences you've had, boards, companies? Like, what stands out to you about the experiences you've had over the course of your career?
Thank you for that question. The first thing that I will tell you is that I had a phenomenal career with UPS. I spent 32 years of my life with UPS. And I retired from UPS. I'm a retiree. And I honestly thought that the only thing I was ever going to do was just work with UPS, be the CIO and the engineering lead for UPS, and then go and do something else on boards or whatever that may be. I never thought that I would have the opportunity to work on a technology company. And at that stage in my life, jumping from a company like UPS over to a technology company like Salesforce was a bit of a risk and a bit of a change. But I have absolutely zero regrets. And it really refreshed me in many different ways. I had to learn new technologies. I had to engage in different ways. I had to adjust to a different company culture. And I feel really fortunate to have had that amazing career with UPS, with just a top-notch organization where we have incredible people working every day to get your packages delivered and see how technology made that better every single day. And now be here at Salesforce where I've had the opportunity to see how technology is built from scratch, technology at scale that supports companies like IBM, massive organizations that are hugely dependent on this technology. And one thing that I'm incredibly appreciative of is the fact that here, I've had an opportunity to connect with hundreds of CIOs doing the job that you do, the job that I do. And I think often, and if I wouldn't have taken that risk of moving from UPS to Salesforce, I I probably would have never had the opportunity to connect with you and get to know you and have these experiences that have been so valuable for me here at Salesforce, certainly trying to help the organization do well as we deploy technology here for the business.
Yeah, and I love it. So one of my core tenets and one of the things I really wanted to do with this podcast is, you know, show that we're all human beings. I think sometimes we're kind of like, there's a perspective maybe we're in an ivory tower or we're not accessible. It's like, we're all at the end of the day human. And I think that's something you and I share. And you said something that was very meaningful to me when we were chatting about like the moments that you've had with people in your career are really some of the most, some of the most meaningful across your whole career. I'd love for you to kind of share some of that as well.
I will be turning 59 years old soon. I start thinking about what I'm going to do next in my own personal career. And what I think often about is the fact that, you know, after so many years of doing this, you start forgetting about the projects that you worked on. You just have little snippets of things that went well, things that didn't go so well. The experiences are the ones that you carry with you. But, you know, I've been really getting to the point where, my goodness, the projects matter when you're working on them. But when it's all said and done, what matters most is the impact that people had on you and the impact that you had on people. And, you know, it's just so interesting. I've been away from UPS for 3 years. And when I connect with UPSers, you know, they don't ask me questions about the projects that we worked on 5 years ago. They talk to me about their families. They talk to me about where they are in their careers. They talked about the opportunities that they found when we were working together and when they were part of my team. To me, that is incredibly rewarding. And now at Salesforce, you know, and I've worked with just a phenomenal team of IT professionals here. I am so appreciative of the work that these professionals do in support of Salesforce. It's fascinating for me to see their passion, their drive, the desire to make a difference. So now that I look back at the last 3 years that I've been here, you know, certainly the one of the most rewarding parts of being at Salesforce has been the opportunity to work with these great, amazing people. And at the end, the projects will be forgotten, but the people are never forgotten.
No, and I appreciate it. I won't leave you hanging out on a ledge saying you turned 59, but it's like I turned 50 last year. And that was really the moment. I mean, there was really something, I think, in that, I call it, maybe it's a positive midlife crisis or not really a crisis, but it really is. I think at the end of the day, I want that good positive friction to come with a better outcome. And then just really, you know, care as much as you can about the people along the way, back to the assume positive intent and just those moments and the people, you know, just this weekend, I got a ping from one of my old chairman of the board and, you know, one of the jobs I had, just say, how are you doing? And it's like, you're so spot on. It's those human moments that mean the world, I think, especially Absolutely. As you progress in your career. So,
and you know, and we are fortunate because we work for companies, you know, when I was at UPS, here at Salesforce as well, and you at IBM, companies that are built on people. Mm-hmm. And they have been great companies all these years because they've done something really important. You know, UPS, we used to have this saying, I'm sure the company still has it, that people are our most important asset, right? Well, at the end of the day, these are people businesses. And the great part of being part of these organizations is the fact that you get an opportunity to work closely with just amazing people every single day. And I'm really happy that we had a chance to connect today, Anne.
Yep, absolutely. And just, you know, thank you so much for taking the time here today. Just always a pleasure talking to you. And hopefully we will run into each other in person again soon. So thank you so much.
I'm sure we will.
Thank you all for joining us today on this episode of Transformers. We hope you enjoyed it and we hope you'll come back next time.